Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
This woman started life as a primary school teacher. I mean, she's a very good person. But over the last couple of years, she's been securing her place, I could sound nervous, don't I, in the bloodied echelon of crime and thriller writers in Ireland. Nasty people. But now she's back and she's showing us the dark underside of coastal Dublin. I knew it. All those posh people are hiding all these secrets. The novel's called The Night I Killed Him. And it's released today. Congratulations, Jill Perdue.
Thank you very much, and thank you so much for having me on. I'm delighted to be here.
Not at all. I was telling you, I was overstimulated last night because I finished the last 100 pages are, you know, a bit of a roller coaster. I don't recommend it just before sleep if you have to be up early in the morning.
That is the dream thing I'd like to hear, and that is what I try to do. Try to keep people turning at the very end to get to the end.
Very good. Come here. It's on the cover of the book and everything. Odun Lera. I think you used to have to call it an RT parallel.
Yes.
Dunleary is the heart of this whole thing.
It really is. And I have to sort of start off by, first of all, saying that, because I know there were some headlines in the article and in the Irish Times that, like, Dunleary has a dark side. So I hasten to say that it's not just Dunleary has a dark side, but the reason I chose Dunleary as the setting for this story is because it's a place of such contrast as well. So,
yeah.
Do you know, all of us, I suppose, have the dark, you know, that any little town or any house or even a family has its dark secrets. But in Dunleary, it's such a contrast because you have this beautiful, beautiful location and, you know, the sea and the bright water and everything is gleaming, but had the dark side. Plus, I had a little... I had a connection with Dunleary. I had been to school out in Dunleary. So,
yes, I read that in your acknowledgements at the end.
Yeah,
so you're
yeah.
not from or have lived there.
I had lived further up the road. I'd kind of lived up in kind of Shankill area.
Yeah.
But back in the day, it was, or maybe I was a very bold child, but I was sent off to a girls' boarding school, which I thought was going to be like, you know, Enid Blyton Chalet School or something.
Okay.
And it wasn't.
There was a boarding school in Dunleary?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It is now, I don't know if you can say it now, it was Glengarra Park School. And we used to call it Glengarra Park School for Young Ladies. So it was.
So you knew Dunleary as a
I knew it as a place. Yeah, and it's such an iconic place. Yeah.
I think people outside of Dublin, we've been hearing about Dunleary as this really kind of posh area for years, but it's actually got, it's just like a country town that has a mix. There are loads of fancy houses.
Yes, yes.
But it has a really lovely mix, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not, I think that's exactly, it has the air of a country town that just happens to be beside the sea. It has all the old kind of Victorian grandeur and, you know, the pier and the history, and it has a huge history, but it's also kind of no nonsense as well and practical town. It's, you know, it was a busy port. So, and then you have all the sailing and everything, but you also have the RNLI, which feature in the book.
You do, you really celebrate the lifeboats,
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I got to do a little tour of it, of the lifeguard hut there, or the lifeboat hut. So, yeah, so Dunleary has everything, and it's not up itself. It's not, doesn't have too many airs and graces.
It's funny because I think outsiders, we think Dunleary's posh, but when I came to Dublin, people told me, oh, Dunleary, I wouldn't go down there.
Oh, really?
It's rough. So it was very contrasting views, but it kind of has that nice mix.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's buzzing again, isn't it? I don't know if you've been there.
Absolutely,
inside town was kind of dilapidated. Yeah. Now it's full of independent
definitely
foodie places.
Yeah, foodie. And of course, you have the Lexicon Library, which is just stunning. It's so stunningly.
Did they hate that initially?
Well, I heard that, you know, I know there was controversy, but I just think it's such a, what would you call it? You call it a strong statement. I mean, you can see it from, you know, I'd say you can see it from outer space, but you can see it out in, you know, you can definitely see it from the bay.
Yeah.
And inside, it's just like the resource is fantastic.
Spectacular and amazing views.
Yeah, amazing views.
So you decide, because usually you set them in a fictional, more inland Dublin town, your books.
Yes, a thinly disguised mixture of where I live, which is Rathfarnham. So it's a kind of a mixture of Rathfarnham and Churchtown.
Yeah.
And I didn't necessarily set out to set them there, but I suppose one part of me is quite lazy. I'm always dying to tell the story because when I'm writing, I see it happening a bit like a movie. So I'm dying to tell it. And one of the things that I find quite time consuming is setting a little, you know, a map, and that road is there. And where did I say? Did I say she stood on the corner there? But where is that corner? So it's much handier to just put it where I live, or a place I know very well. And then I can just change change names of streets or something, you know. So I have changed names of some streets.
But some of the apartments are real, aren't they?
Yes.
The sailing coach, the detectives visit.
Yes. Well, I was very cheeky and I did get permission to admit this from a family member, my sister-in-law. So I think there are some buildings and some houses that just you step into them and you go, right, this should be in a book. You know, this should be there.
Yeah, yeah.
So a family member moved into one of the apartments near Bullock Harbour there, and they were kind of built in the 70s, mm-hmm. and they're called Pilot View, and they have spectacular views, just glass, you know, windows straight looking out over over Dublin Bay.
Wow.
So that particular one, though, had a bit of a back history. It was two bits of back history. So number one, it was the apartment where Gooboo happened in, was it 82?
Go away. 82.
Yeah, 82. I'm going to let you check the details. But it was, you know, it was where it was the then Attorney General's apartment where Malcolm MacArthur, the later convicted murderer, hid out.
It's so an incredible heritage.
It has
that
a bit of heritage. And also a writer had lived there before, Susan Howitch, a very well-known UK writer, had either rented or lived in that apartment before, which I didn't find out. But anyway, when I was in that apartment, I just thought, this is perfect for a sailing coach. Wouldn't you want to look here and look down in the bay?
Makes sense.
So I stuck it in the novel.
But it had that kind of that real life chill that would attract a crime writer, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Of course, sailing is a very big part of this story. Are you a sailor? Where'd you get all this?
I am not a sailor. I have what I would call a healthy respect for the sea. I love it to look at, and I can swim and everything. And, you know, back in the day, did my little life-saving badge. But no, I mean, I'm not a sailor. I would be terrified and probably seasick. So I did a lot of research. I never stop, as you'll see from the acknowledgements. I'm never shy of asking people to tell me about the stuff. I need to know this. So I just ask people. So I spoke to two young sailors. One of them was one of the girls I used to teach dancing to, Lara. And then there's a guy called Tom who sailed. Then they would have great experience. Now, I'm not going to name which boats they sailed because I'm going to get it wrong. But for the purposes of the story, I liked the idea of the dual partnership of the 49er.
Yes.
And when I looked at lots of footage.
And explaining the name.
Yeah, exactly. So that is, I think, because it's 49 foot long and it's a perfect, God, I hope I don't get that wrong. But
you
I think
put it in the book.
Yeah.
It's like 4.99 metres.
Yeah, thank you. 4.99 metres. Well, I put it in the book and then in my head it went straight into 49ers. Well, thank you for that.
That's from memory. I hope I'm right.
Somebody can check that.
They are called
49ers. And it's to do with the length of the boat. The question is it feet or metres?
She did the research at the time, I swear. So the kids were helpful. This was a 14-year-old.
Yes.
Did you actually go out in the boat, by the way?
I didn't. I don't know. I have been offered, somebody was offering me, a couple of people said, oh, you should come out in the boat. So I think that joy is to come with me with my life jacket on my anti-seasickness.
Because there's so much about the lifeboats, which, no spoilers at all, in the end, the last quarter of the book, you obviously really love. Of the lifeboats. Did you get to see?
I did. I have, and I must actually put it up on social media, but I you know, took footage. So a very nice lifeboat coxswain, who is also a Garda. So how perfect is that? Paul brought me round the lifeboat station, showed me the, I'm going to call it a rib, but that could be wrong. But anyway, showed me the lifeboat.
Yeah.
And the team were there as well. And they showed me things like they have a whole kind of a little book of different search patterns. So I suppose the science behind, you know, they don't just go out and see what's happening. You know, they search in I suppose, as you would have to do that. So so I did a lot of research with that.
You did.
And it was just fascinating. And it's amazing what they do.
You really portray it as what it is, which I hadn't seen described before. It's like a kind of a floating ambulance, isn't it? Where they find someone unresponsive in the water. They have all the equipment on board as they get to land.
Yeah, and I looked into all of that as well. And I did research that, you know, sort of all the little cubbies. Like, I suppose it's teach you to be tidy because everything, you know, all the life-saving equipment is in the different kind of numbered compartments. And everybody knows, I suppose, in a situation you've, you know, every second counts. So everybody knows what they have to do. And I'm just blown away by people who risk their lives.
Incredible.
For other people, you know. So, they had to go in the book.
And particularly in Dunleary, because, of course, those two piers, East and West Pier, are there because of how famously choppy and deep it is.
Yes.
And there were many shipwrecks and people without rowing lifeboats back in the day.
Rescue,
unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's all the sailing stuff. So you're not a sailor.
Sorry, I've just let down the sailing community. But yeah, not a sailor.
One of the main characters, because obviously the female detectives are the main ones. Gemma, she is a career in social media and she has this kind of version of her life online. Mm. You go, why did you choose to have a social media alleged influencer?
Yes. Yeah. Well, again, I suppose in the way that Dunleary was the place where, you know, I kind of felt, well, we have beautiful appearance, but we have things happening behind, you know, behind closed doors or underneath the surface. So I wanted, I suppose Gemma's job had to be something like that. It had to be very much, you know, a surface job where she is portraying the best of herself and, you know, she's promoting a lifestyle. And she's beautiful and she has this perfect house and she has the perfect husband and the perfect little kid and everything is that she's, you know, presenting is that she's perfect. I suppose I wasn't really, I mean, there is so much and it's in the papers and, you know, there's Netflix documentaries about it where you have influencers who have, you know, gone over to the dark side. You had that one, what was it? Apple cider vinegar, I think, was the one.
Proliferation.
Yeah,
there's always bad news in the end.
Well, it was. And it was somebody
who happy clappy lifestyle is not what it seems.
Yeah, and the things that purport to cure people and cure every ill are not cures. They're just somebody flogging things. But what happened as I researched it, as I did actually follow some influencers in particular, and this is a really good influencer, an Irish influencer, Lisa from Lisa's Lust List.
Yep.
And I found myself, I just was so invested in her story and how kind she is and how nice to her followers. So I kind of felt in that way, well, you'll see in the story, but for Gemma.
She's a genuine one.
Yeah, genuine. Well.
Nothing fake.
With a genuine connection 100%. With the people. Yeah.
That you kind of, you also portray the audience, don't you, and how invested they become.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as day to day.
That's
really
it.
Feel like you're friends with them.
Yeah, well, that's it, because I was remembering when Lisa's dog, Murph, I can tell you her dog, when he had a bone stuck in his throat or something, she had to take him to the vet. And I, you know, that morning I was like, I wonder, I better check in and see how Lisa's dog is doing.
But you don't know her personally.
Of course, No, and that's what I felt for Gemma, because Gemma, as you'll see in the story, she is quite isolated, but her followers are her friends. Like at one point they're her only friends and particular ones. So I gave, you know, some of the followers a kind of a little role in the book, and well, you have to wait and see what happens. But the followers, you know, it is a genuine connection that she has with them.
Okay, and you're not poking fun of those people.
Certainly not.
The darkness in Gemma's life, of course, is the theme of domestic violence, and this is where fiction has to make things up to make things more dramatic.
Yeah.
Do we need fiction on this subject?
Well, that is a very good question. I suppose for me, the answer is it's not so much that we need fiction on, you know, to cover certain subjects. Mm-hmm. I feel that what fiction, and certainly for me reading it, but particularly writing it, I use it to help me kind of make sense of the world. And the world, it would be great if it was all nice and happy and everybody's lending each other things and, you know, supporting each other. But there is, as we know from, you know, geopolitical things, but it is a dark world where people are cruel and can be very cruel and horrible to each other. So I like to kind of, you know, I want a story that doesn't shy away from certain things, but shows how ordinary people in their own little microscopic way can make the world a better place for, God, that sounds very Miss Worldy, but well, anyway, but you know. But
and you also want us to root for someone who's in a bad place.
Yeah, exactly.
This is important in a crime novel.
Yeah.
Before writing, we mentioned you were a primary school teacher and a dance teacher as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So you finished the primary school teaching anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I took a career break. I took a career break a long time ago when my kids were small. So we're talking like more than 20 years ago. And at that time, I had already been doing a little bit of multitasking because I have always danced and I had my ballet teaching qualification. So I kind of left the primary teaching, which I loved, but I left that for a few years. And at that time, I was then writing, I was writing for kids and I was also doing the dancing. So I've sort of moved, you know, each section. I've done the teaching, then the dance teaching, and now I'm full time doing the writing.
Doing between them, because you've gone to adult books. Have you finished writing children's books?
I'd never say finished, because I have, you know, so if anyone was listening, no, I have drawerfuls. I have a couple, you know, that are really dear to my heart that are finished. I suppose certainly it depends on what story, but for the moment, I'm really loving writing for adults. Yeah.
And it's a lovely new, relatively new burst at life for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I believe you reached a stage in life where you felt unseen.
Yeah. I know my kids were kind of like, what? Unseen? You're always there. But I think it's nearly kind of invisible to yourself. Rather that you lose touch with who you are. And it's kind of tied up with both being part of that, you know, there's two phrases. The one, which is the sandwich years, where you are a person. It doesn't have to be the mom or whatever, but you're sandwiched between your kids and maybe elderly parents or elderly relatives that you're caring for.
Yeah.
And you're kind of trying to do both jobs and you're stuck in the middle. So that was part of it, because my granny lived till she was 97, but my mom died in her 60s. So I did a bit of my granny caring.
Yeah.
And then my dad, you know, then was, you know, loved to, but was very close to my dad and kind of involved in his care. So that kind of, you know, 15 years goes by before you know where you are with that. And that then, you know, my own kids kind of grew up and left home. And I had always heard that phrase empty nest and sort of thought,
yeah,
I thought that's just a clucky, you know, only women who are, you know, only mums who are so invested in their children and they've no other life. That won't happen to me. And it really did happen to me, because it's a transition time. It's a time when you turn around and you go, okay, there is nobody else driving what's happening in my life now. And, you know, my elderly relatives I was caring for had either passed away or were looked after. And my kids were looking after themselves. And I'm, you know, the dog was there at that stage. But you suddenly go, well, actually, and if somebody says, what would you like to do? And you go, I don't know, you know.
No one's ever asked you.
Yeah, exactly. And you haven't asked yourself. You've neglected to ask yourself. And with that, I think it was just really important for me to go back to, well, what do I love doing? And there was a story, the book, which was If I Tell, was a story that had been originally a children's story and it just wouldn't leave me. So that,
you
so I went back
it.
To that.
Did you have a long period in the empty house? Was it tiptoeing around on your own?
I think we're about 8 years, actually. Yeah. And then the kids came back for a little while at the nest and now are kind of in their little nest of their own. So, yeah, no, we did a long.
What is the everyday like when you feel you're talking about like feeling invisible, aren't you?
Yeah.
And that you're stuck in this quiet building.
Yeah.
Not sure what's going to happen next. I would imagine a lot of people feel like this quite.
Yeah, I think so. And they've lost touch kind of. Yeah. You know, I mean, I know there is the kind of there's the separate thing that might be that. As a woman, and that, maybe that's another argument, but as a woman, kind of, who are you if you're not, you know, are you young and out there looking to, you know, where you're kind of seen according to your procreation, where you are on that scale.
Okay.
But it's not really, it's more than that. It's a kind of a loneliness, unless you put yourself out there. And because with kids, you're always talking to somebody else. You know, there's always a mom or somebody, you know, you're doing a pickup or you're bringing them somewhere. You're always involved with other people. So this is a time that you can just, you're just middle-aged woman walking down to Tesco's, you know. So I think it's really important to not, you know, to put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like if somebody had told me as I was sort of getting ready this morning, oh my God, I'm going to be on the radio, you know, I just would have, if somebody told me that 10 years ago, I just wouldn't have believed it.
So you had been like out in the community, you know, looking after kids, teaching.
Yeah,
so you kind of develop a shyness,
essentially. Yeah, I absolutely.
That you didn't have previously.
No.
But you got yourself back.
No, if I'd said to people I was shy, they'd be like, yeah, of course you're not shy. But I think, and it was easy to hide behind that shyness and just only do the things that you're really comfortable with, you know.
It has a huge impact on women in particular, doesn't it?
Yeah, I really think it does. And you have to look into yourself and follow what, you know, what motivates. Like maybe it's something creative. Maybe it's something just for yourself. Even if it's just that, well, I always loved to, you know, go to get out in the garden, or I always loved to walk. To just make the times to do the things that you want to do.
Do you think it needs a confident personality to break through if somebody is like that now and they're thinking, no, well, I don't have the confidence to go out and start a new hobby with someone and meet new friends?
I think it's kind of a bit of a chicken and egg. I think you just need some good friends. I mean, certainly with me, with the writing, one of the things that tipped the balance was because I had never joined, been part of a writing group. I had never done, you know, creative writing classes. So one summer, the summer of 2018, I steeled myself and did a summer creative writing course in London. Stayed with the daughters, who in a nice role reversal were there. Now, Mom, you're going to get on the tube here. Now, be careful that you don't go on the wrong side. And this is where you get off. And here's your apple for break time. You know, so, what I would say is there will always be a friend who'll push you to do that. I mean, women are great for doing that.
Because men who are lonely, they don't tell other men. Do women discuss among themselves? I feel like I'm in the middle-aged lady going down to Tesco and that's my life.
Yes, they do.
They do.
Very recently, I was talking to a friend who didn't even know that this was one of the things I was talking about, who was saying, I don't know, I'm just kind of stuck, you know, and I'm kind of... and then maybe we're always encouraged not to talk like that in case it's like, well, you should be really grateful. You have everything, you know. But I think women are really good at encouraging each other like that. And I would say to them, if you're not, like, say it to your friend. Say, I was thinking of doing that.
Very good advice.
You know,
just say it to the friend.
Yeah, say it to your friend. And your friend will, if they're a good friend, will say, go for it. Do it. And you know. And then, well, again, what has happened for me is the writing community here.
And you've developed new friends.
So many new friends.
Mad new friends
now. Absolutely.
The crime writers.
The crime writers are just brilliant. They are. It is such a supportive group. You think that we should be all ready to stab each other in the back with our little daggers.
No, you have the best to crack.
Yeah, we
and
do.
It's very closed as well. Yeah. Never find out who's in.
Well, obviously. Yeah, no, we can't. No, that's.
Are you in the WhatsApp group? No, we can't talk about it.
I can't. Nobody. What is it? There is no WhatsApp group. It's denied. No.
And of course, you get people dancing as well, don't you? Which is about building people's confidence and getting them out.
Again, and the fun with that, never mind the fitness, although that is there too. So I retired from teaching, running the ballet in the ballet school a couple of years ago. But I was so glad. So I kind of have this group. Two groups, actually, called the Never Too Late Dancers. And they half of them are... Watch this space.
And it's still going. Never too late.
Absolutely. Dance. Absolutely.
And we're going to plug one thing at a time now,
right,
Jill.
Sorry. Okay.
So today is about the book, which is good crack. And it's recurring for your fans who will know it. It's out today.
It is out today.
On the day of the Dunleary Regatta. You knew what you were doing.
Perfect timing.
The Night I Killed Him by Jill Perdue. It's published by Penguin Sandycove. It's available in all the bookshops. And there are plenty of them around Dunleary as well. As of today, Jill Perdue, keep on dancing.
Thank you so much.
Talk
Thanks for
again.
Having me. Thanks. Email.